Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB in Freeport, New York. In this segment, Dave's Gone Cultural, which usually has to deal with a theater. We are going to deal with a theater with a very special friend of mine who's been on the show, I think, at least twice, maybe more than that. And I've been on his program a couple of times. He has a show called Two.
At least twice.
At least twice. Oh, there. He's jumping in there even before I've introduced him. Thank you very much, Charlie.
Keep going.
I was going to say that you have a program on Manhattan cable television called Two on the Isle, which is co-hosted with Jeff Goodman. It airs every week on Friday nights at 8.
Actually, every other week, but that's good.
I'm sorry. Every other week on the Manhattan Cable Channel, what is it?
Channel 57.
Channel 57. You can also watch it on the Internet if you go to the MNN website. We'll hear more about that in a bit.
www.mnn.com.
Why don't you just take over right now? Why don't you, conduct the interview?
I thought you knew the rest.
Charlie Gross. I didn't even get to say your name. Charles Gross, who is the co-host of Two on the Isle, and you see pretty much everything on Broadway, a lot of stuff off Broadway, too, and we've both seen a bunch of stuff that we can argue and yell and agree and disagree about.
Right.
So let's get right to it. This is a relatively slow time for the theater in New York. It starts to get heavy again as we get into the spring, but there have been a few things opening, including Little Women.
Little Women.
A musical.
Well, I think this show has three things going for it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, first of all, it's based on the book of the same name. Second, you've got Susan Stroman directing it.
Mm-hmm.
And the third would be Sutton Foster, and Sutton Foster.
Well, that's three things right there. I mean,
total
five. This, yeah.
The one conclusion you come to after watching this show is that if it wasn't apparent during Thoroughly Modern Millie, it is now. Sutton Foster is a bona fide Broadway star.
Absolutely agreed. And she did win the Tony.
Yes.
For Best Actress for Thoroughly Modern Millie, and she'll certainly be up for a Tony nomination
this time again.
Whether she'll win,
there's still quite a bit of the season to go.
Yeah.
But
what did you think of Little Women had you read the book at some point?
I actually have never read the book.
Me neither. I'm a guy. Men do not want to read Little Bloody Women or Little Men, the sequel by Louisa May Alcott. I guess I will now that I've seen the show. I've seen the movie with Winona Ryder and all those people.
Oh, yeah, and wasn't there an earlier one with Katharine Hepburn?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So, but this was really the first time I paid really close attention to the story, even though I saw the movie not too long ago.
Right.
I
actually have never seen any version of it. This was my first exposure to it.
What did you think?
Well, I'll tell you something. I liked the story.
Mm-hmm.
I adored Sutton Foster.
Okay.
There's some very nice numbers in the show, mainly one. Joe, by the way, is an aspiring writer. This takes place around the time of the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
It's four sisters, five sisters? Four sisters, I think.
Well, eventually.
Yeah.
It's four down to three or five down to four, one of the two.
Yeah, and their father is away fighting the Civil War. So they're at home with their mother, who's played very nicely by Maureen McGovern.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows them growing up. The spotlight is on Joe, a bit of a tomboy, who wants to be a writer. And that is the role Sutton Foster plays so beautifully. And one of the highlights of the show is when one of her stories is being reenacted on stage.
Yeah, they do that pretty much at the very beginning of the show, and there's also an extended part of that at the beginning of the second act.
Exactly.
Where she's miming the story, and also it's all happening behind her, and it's very, very fun. She is funny.
Yes.
I want to see her in a farce.
I'd love to see her do something with her brother, Hunter Foster.
Who was in Year in Town, and he's very talented as well.
Right. I mean, I think, but Year in Town, Little Shop, and
Little Shop
more recently, the,
yeah.
Little Shop last year, and more recently the producers, I think they're the most talked about brother and sister on Broadway since Fred and Adele Astaire. But getting back to Little Women,
mm-hmm.
I liked the story. I enjoyed the acting. But I found the score to be very bland. I mean, nothing wrong with it per se. It's just not very exciting, considering.
I agree. Yeah. And, well, Alan Lee did the book, and I don't even remember Marcia Dickstein, I think, did the book and lyrics. I don't have the playbill in front of me, but I would remember it if I really wanted to.
Yeah.
That is the problem. You're sitting there, and it's not that the score is so bad.
No,
but
not bad.
You're just sitting there, and you're like, it's not really advancing the story, and I'm not going to be humming this or remembering this, or I'm not going to be clamoring for the original cast recording, which is what you used to do, for the great old musicals.
Exactly.
I mean, in the old days, you'd have these musicals with wonderful songs, and the book was like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And now more and more we're getting musicals with good stories, even if the book kind of is iffy. The story itself is usually based on something
right.
like Dracula, let's say, or Tom Sawyer. Mm-hmm. And now the music is just sort of there.
Yeah.
And it's being carried along by the story rather than by the tunes. So kind of a shift there.
And I have nothing wrong with a show being carried by the story. It worked incredibly well in She Loves Me, but that's a show with an incredible score.
Score, yeah.
This is a show, again, it's not that there's nothing wrong. It's just, you know, it's like one of the Joe Stella Border says about her story, "I believe you're capable of doing better" in the first act. And to the writing team of this show, I am sure they are capable of doing better. And I wish they had.
Nicely put. Nicely put.
Also, Marie McGovern, an actress and a singer who I really adore, has been saddled with such a dull role. I mean, if you've ever seen her in her nightclub act, and you know she's got an incredible range in her voice,
mm-hmm.
and she barely gets to use any of it. I mean, I'm glad she's on Broadway,
right?
But I wish she were in a role that better utilized her talents.
You know who would have made an even better Marmy? Now, that's the character she plays, the mother of
right.
all these kids. You know what would have been really great?
Mm-hmm.
Dame Edna. How's that for a segue? I know, that's
well,
a desperate segue, but, yeah.
Given the way Dame Edna's children have turned out...
Well, Dame Edna is back with a vengeance. She has two kids, by the way. One, the wonderful Kenny, and what's her other...
It's a daughter.
A daughter, yeah.
Yes.
Who's the other sexual preference, so we hear. But let's explain. Dame Edna is back with a vengeance, literally. That's the name
Dame
of her
Edna
return.
Dame Edna is the creation of the Australian actor Barry Humphries.
Right.
And he is by far his most popular creation. She has been back on Broadway before. That's why it's called Back with Vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
First show was a good show. The second show is so much better.
You know,
I
agree
it's
better, but why?
Well, I think she's just in such wonderful form, and her material is excellent.
You know, when I was watching the first act, I was thinking, you know, it's funny. I wasn't really laughing out loud
mm-hmm.
a lot. I was enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured, okay, it's going to be pretty much like the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was in the second act, which I think a couple of things just happened to make the show overall a lot more fun this time for me than it was last time. One is, she did not overstay her welcome.
No.
I remember in the first show, it was about 2 hours and 40 minutes long, which is a long time for a one-person show, even if they have a couple of helpers and a pianist and stuff like that.
It's the fabulous Edna Etter.
How about that blonde Edna Ett? Was she a knockout or what?
Huh.
You didn't notice? Oh,
they all look pretty cute to me.
And if my wife is listening, it's not that I noticed, but the people around me noticed and had me write it down.
Of course they
did. But this time, it was about 2 hours and 5 minutes long,
mm-hmm.
which surprised me. I was like, oh, my God, he finally got the hint
yeah.
that, you know, you leave them wanting more or having just enough. And that really made a big difference. Plus, the audience interaction, I don't know if it's this way every single time, but when he got that that young couple up on stage
mm-hmm.
and called her mother-in-law, her mother-in-law, his mother,
mm-hmm.
And gave them a little romantic moment on stage, hysterically funny.
Yes. Also, they do a movie of the week, the Dame Edna story.
that wasn't as funny, but that was still cute, and there was so much goodwill already at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate it more this time, the fact that, yes, there's obviously a very set bunch of themes and jokes and stuff that she does, but she really does tailor it every single time to what's going on and to who's in the crowd. And I had a lot more, not that I didn't have respect before,
right.
but of just how different each show probably is
yeah.
and how she has to move all the stuff around and change the order of things and literally think of jokes on her feet.
But you will be waving your gardenias at the end of this show.
Gardenias?
That's her trademark flower, isn't it?
No.
Huh?
Gladys. Gladiolas. Wave your gladi, dude.
Oh, sorry. Ooh.
Oh, my goodness.
May the dame forgive me.
Well, and may the dame forgive me for ever questioning just how good
yeah.
Barry Humphries and Dame Edna is.
Yeah, this is, I think it's definitely better. Than the first show.
Well
and
worth it.
Definitely worth the
delightful.
Delight to see. In fact, all in all, I think I've had the most fun of that show than I have at any I just can't call it a one-person show because it's got her
chorus,
but
people,
more
yeah.
or less, I liked it better than Mario Cantone. I liked it better than even Billy Crystal's an actor I admire very much.
I wouldn't go that far. I thought Billy Crystal stayed too long, but apart from that, it was magnificent.
The Crystal Show had a little more meat on the bones. That was meant to have a more dramatic. Dame Ed is just pure comedy.
Absolutely. And speaking of comedy, but of the unintentional variety, I wonder, here's another segue. Don't I do this so smoothly?
I am impressed.
Can you feel the good vibrations that I am putting out through radio?
Well, no doubt.
Two segues and one switch, yeah.
We're supposed to be talking about Good Vibrations, the new Beach Boy musical,
musical,
which comes on the heels of, basically, we have a new genre in the theater. It's called take a rock group, take their songs, and find some sort of story about it, and put it on stage. And it worked incredibly well for ABBA with...
not incredibly well. It worked,
well, it worked
okay.
Financially. It's a big hit. With Mamma Mia, why I will never understand why that show is still running.
Fair enough.
Also, Billy Joel, a composer and performer I admire very much, with Moving Out, which I was highly disappointed with.
I was not a big fan of Moving Out either. I found it very repetitious.
Yeah.
But then again, I'm not a dance person. I've heard people who love dance find a lot more to it than I do.
I enjoy good dancing also. I didn't enjoy that show at all.
Okay.
Even though the Beach Boys, I happen to love their music.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching this show, and you had mentioned one of Dame Edna's chorus. You have to look at the first number. There is this one actress, unfortunately, I don't have the playbill with me, so I don't know her name, but she is known as Bikini Girl.
Is she tall and blonde?
That's the one.
Yeah, okay.
And
the people
dancing.
Around me noticed her.
What?
The people around me couldn't take their eyes off her.
Neither could I. I mean, she's doing these 60s dances. Get the girl a cage.
And
that's pretty much after that she kind of fades into the chorus.
Just give me the king of cage, if you know what I'm saying. But, you know.
And she is in a bikini for a good part of the show.
Yeah.
Now, this kind of starts off like an alternative version of Grease. You know, what if Danny and Sandy didn't hook up until after they graduated from high school?
Well put. I didn't think of that.
Essentially, it takes place sometimes in the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
Given that there's Beach Boy music and someone drives a Mustang in the show, I assume it's the latter half, say anywhere from 1964 to 1999. They're purposely vague about this.
Yeah.
And this high school, somewhere in the Northeast, probably New York,
or
graduating.
It felt like Midwest-ish to me, but okay.
Well,
yeah.
It was supposed to be in the Northeast, because you'll notice, cause it decides to go to California, and basically there's the school cool guy, and there's this nerdy girl.
Who's, you know, if she takes her glasses off, she's not nerdy at all, like nobody notices, duh. Okay.
Yeah, okay, well,
one of those, all right, it's a convention.
Basically, she's had a crush on him for years, and he really hasn't cared about her,
Right.
And it's a pretty horrible plot at the beginning. Then they start going to California.
And it gets worse.
Oh, no. And somewhere along the line, the plot ascends to the level of, say, a Frankie and Annette Beach movie.
Okay. Because
I happen to like Frankie and Annette Beach movies. I kind of was drawn into it. They threw a few curves, which I wasn't expecting, enough to make it interesting for me.
Okay.
I like the music. They go to California, by the way, and the show's big technical highlight is that they're driving in their pretend car, and someone is projecting the road from California to New York to California on the back of it.
You know, I have to tell you, that sequence, which
what?
Starts with, that sequence that starts with projections, and then there's this very surreal moment.
Yeah.
It's only about half a minute long, but it is so funny, it's so clever, that it makes everything, you start to wonder, wait a minute, if they could do this in this show, it was something worthy of Forbidden Broadway at its very best.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell were they doing, the other 2 hours and 20 minutes?
Proving that in California, even a nerdy class valedictorian can be popular if she can fill out a bikini.
Well, yeah.
That's...
It doesn't. But you know what? I can stand the stupid plot, but it was just the first thing that turned me off immediately was that, especially in the first act, they mic'd everything so loud.
Mm-hmm.
The music, first of all, I don't even know if there was a live band in there or if it was all pre-recorded music or a combination of both.
Well, given the mic troubles they were having, the sound troubles they were having the night I was there, I'm pretty sure it was not pre-recorded.
Okay, well, yeah, they didn't have sound trouble. It was just so unbelievably loud and caustic, which is not how you want to hear the Beach Boys. I mean, I know it's rock and roll.
Right.
But it was about the delicacy of the harmonies. It was about the beauty of all the instruments and the arrangements that Brian Wilson was doing. And suddenly it's just this cacophony. You couldn't hear what the singers were singing as they were trying to shout over the music, which is not good for
the sound. I don't think you were there on the same night.
Oh, so what was your problem? Was just bad, well, what happened on your night?
There was some interference. You know, you'd hear, like, a feedback or crackling or something like that.
WGBB coming up.
I actually...
Milo Scalalo's Greek Show!
I actually,
God only knows what...
No, I actually heard it pretty well. There were actually words that I've heard that I've never heard when I've heard the Beach Boys sing it.
Man.
So maybe they got their act together.
Yeah. I wasn't impressed with the singing by a lot of people. I thought it was a little off or off-key. They had a yell. I didn't care for the lead guy. I thought he was a nothing, a blend. It wasn't special in any particular way about him. He wasn't a great dancer, singer, personality.
I don't know. You get the impression that these are talented people, but that more needed to be done to bring out their talents in this show.
How much do I bet within 3 months, okay, show closes, Kate Reinders goes into the Kristen Chenoweth role in Wicked. Betcha.
The one who plays the nerdy girl.
Yeah.
I would not, well, I don't know about the show closing, but she could certainly play that role. I mean, she's kind of a combination of Kristen Chenoweth and Sally Field.
Yeah, okay.
She's absolutely delightful. She sings nicely. I enjoyed her character. I have to say, I think you made some valid points, although, again, the sound system was better on the night I attended.
Fair enough.
My beef with the show, the plot is actually... turned out to be pretty much what I expected. The second act making up for the first act.
Mm-hmm.
Did you catch the Baywatch reference, by the way?
No. Oh, you mean when she runs across?
Yeah.
That was cute. I mean, at that point, they were just throwing anything in.
Yeah, but it worked. I mean, that's how they did it with the Beach movies. And again, those were not high art. They were silly, but they were fun, and this show is fun. The one thing that I think it lacks, you know, I'll agree with you to a large extent about the singing, although, you know, they are wonderful songs, and they did reasonably well. Could have been better.
Okay.
But there wasn't, you know, Bikini Girl notwithstanding.
Yeah.
I wanted to see more dancing. I mean, this is
great dance
music. And I wanted to see a little more creativity with the choreography.
I agree with that. I don't know how much more they can be because a lot of the kinds of songs, especially the surf music, were sort of the same. How much else can you do?
There's plenty if you have the right creativity.
Good point.
You know, you don't have to stick with surfing. You don't have to... There was a lot more that could have been done, and given that this is a Broadway show, it could have been. That said, I really enjoyed the show. It's not great art, but for what it is, I enjoyed it. And if I were to have a choice between going back to see that, or seeing Mamma Mia, or Moving Out, this would be my choice.
I would probably... Ooh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably go Moving Out, Mamma Mia, and then this. Mamma Mia was also too damn loud, and it was also stupid, but it was a more winning kind of stupid. And it seemed like they were more confident in what they were doing, and it wasn't so incredibly like, okay, we'll think of some reason to throw the song in, then we're going to throw a song in.
I think they pretty much, on plenty of occasions, did that.
Even along the lines of like when they do Caroline No, one of the prettier songs in the Wilson canon, and he's saying, you know, where did your long hair go? I mean, she's got long hair! You know, tailor the book to the songs at least. Do something! You know, where's the girl that I used to... It's just. Anywho, one more show. We've got, a couple minutes left. What did you feel, and especially since, you know, I was born... This is not a very particularly good segue. I'm just going into it like crash bang. I was born in Brooklyn.
Well, actually, David, here's your segue. You know, at the end of the show, some of the characters come back east and end up in New York City.
And maybe some of them ended up in...
Brooklyn!
Brooklyn, yes! And they became Brooklyn.
But did you just say that you were a Brooklyn boy, David?
Well, yeah. Yeah, I lived in Brooklyn until I was 12 and a half.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, then went out to the island. So I am a Brooklyn boy, almost a yeshiva bucha, which you would understand. And so have certainly a frame of reference for Donald Margulies' new play called Brooklyn Boy, which is at the Biltmore, because Manhattan Theater Club is putting that on Broadway, with I want to say Alan Arkin, but it's
no,
not.
No, it's
his
son, Adam Arkin,
mm-hmm.
who, and Adam, if you're listening to this, why wasn't your TV show Busting Loose included in your credits?
Oh, I remember that. That was his first breakout.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. Wow.
Yeah.
Anyway, he stars as this middle-aged man whose marriage is going kaput. The one good thing he has, and he also has a father who's dying of cancer, and he never got along with the father because the father's treating him like dirt. But he's written this book. It's his third book, and this is the breakout one. This is the one that's going to be the one people remember him for. It's a masterpiece. It's a populist book about his life veiled through fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's becoming a famous author and going on writing tours, but also coping with every other aspect of his life that's changing and or falling apart. So what did you think of Brooklyn Boy?
What a snooze fest.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh. At first scene, Adam Arkin talks with his father in the hospital. Second scene, Adam Arkin talks with an old childhood friend he sees in the hospital. Third scene, he talks with his wife, who I think appropriately starred in 30-something, which was also a very talky, very slow-moving show.
Well, I like 30-something, and Polly Draper is very good, actually.
So did my wife, but, you know, I never did, and I didn't like this show either. As then he's in California, and he's got a groupie in his bedroom who's real cute, and the show kind of perks up because she's a very interesting character. I still missed about 5 crucial minutes of that scene, I think, as I dozed off, and then I turned to the person who was sitting next to me, actually, the director of Two on the Isle, and I said, what did I miss? And she said, I have no idea.
Wow.
So, I mean,
okay.
There is, I guess, an interesting story in there, but it's so muddled, and it is so slow, and the only scene I really enjoyed was when he's in this Hollywood producer's office, and they get this actor who wants to play basically Adam Arkin, and he seems all wrong for the role. Totally.
Although he does a good, I mean, I guess that's the magic of theater, but when he finally shakes off this stupid little, you know, young boy in Hollywood
he
guy,
he
can pull it off. That's one of those good kind of things in this play,
uh-huh.
where it is going where you expect, and then for a moment it kind of goes somewhere special.
Yes.
But at the same time, you know, I did like it, obviously, more than you did, but I agree that it's missing something. There's a lack of newness and a lack of energy to an extent, and it just kind of sits there.
Yeah.
You know, it's not bad. There's nothing I could particularly point to and say that's wrong with it. It doesn't get particularly stupid. It just we've seen it all before.
It doesn't go anywhere. It's not. There's no real story here. I mean, what is this guy looking for? What does he want? What happens in this play? Nothing really.
I mean, the idea of the play is that he's coming to terms with the death of his father and the way his father treated him all those years.
But
I mean,
you
I think
what?
If
that is there, that is so subtly buried. I mean, his father doesn't even die until the second act.
Right. Well, you don't. The other problem I had with the scene is that they have a scene, mm-hmm. two characters, one of them being Arkin, mm-hmm. and then the other character goes and doesn't come back. Yeah, I mean, the father does come back in a way at the end, but he and the old best friend are the only ones. It seems like a collection of one-act plays
themed
around this one character. Rather than like a play that's really put together where everything's, you know, all together.
There does not seem to be any connection.
I agree.
I think you've hit it right on the head with that.
Maybe you'll agree with me on this, is that a play like this 10 or 15 years ago would have been done at the American Jewish Theater or Jewish Repertory Theater, which are both now, you know, defunct, but they were in these little off-Broadway spaces,
mm-hmm.
and usually the plays that were in them were not terribly exciting. Maybe it was just the space or the direction or something. I mean, they were usually good and well-written, but there was a certain kind of, an over-familiarity with the form, perhaps. And I think this would have been more comfortable there, and we would have accepted it there more than we do in a fairly large Broadway theater for a play, like the Biltmore.
It's entirely possible that a more intimate setting might have helped. To me, having a large theater wasn't a problem.
It was just the play.
It was just the play.
Well, Charlie Gross, it is never a problem to have you on the... That's a nice little segue.
That was a good segue, by the way.
Remind people when you're on TV.
Well, if you're in New York, Channel 57, 8 o'clock every other Friday.
Mm-hmm.
If you are not in Manhattan, www.mnn, that's Mary Nancy Nancy, .org, and you click that at 8 o'clock on Friday, and then you click on 57, and you will see Two on the Aisle with myself and Jeff Goodman. And if you see it march, you may just see a very popular Long Island radio host guest starring.
Really?
On the show, yeah.
Who could that be?
Oh, someone you know and love very dearly. Someone I know you have a great admiration for, David.
Imus? No. Me!
I didn't know Imus was on Long Island.
Every once in a while, who knows? He's a New Yorker.
You've been on the show many times. I mean, you're kind of like the Joan, you know, Johnny Carson just died. You're kind of like our Joan Rivers. Or...
Well, actually, Johnny and Joan fell out. But, I'm kind of the pitching.
Well, we're still at the part where we still like you.
I'm the Paul Schaefer. You know, I sort of come in there when Dave has heart palpitations or something. Anywho, thank you, Charlie. Thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you on the aisle and in the Daverhood.
Okay.